for covenant, fidelity, and King David.
2 Samuel 9, 1 through 8, out of the Message. One day, David asked, "Is there anyone left of Saul's family? If so, I'd like to show him some kindness in honor of Jonathan." It happened that a servant from Saul's household named Ziba was there. They called him into David's presence. The king asked him, "Are you Ziba?" "Yes, sir," he replied. The king asked, "Is there anyone left from the family of Saul to whom I can show some godly kindness?" Ziba told the king, "Yes, there is, Jonathan's son, lame in both feet." "Where is he?" "He's living at the home of Machir, son of Amiel, in Lodabar." King David didn't lose a minute. He sent and got him from the home of Machir, son of Amiel, in Lodabar. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, who was the son of Saul, came before David, he bowed deeply, abasing himself, honoring David. David spoke his name, "Mephibosheth." "Yes, sir?" "Don't be frightened," said David. "I'd like to do something special for you in memory of your father Jonathan. To begin with, I'm returning to you all the properties of your grandfather Saul. Furthermore, from now on, you'll take all your meals at my table." Shuffling and stammering, not looking him in the eye, Mephibosheth said, "Who am I that you pay attention to a stray dog like me?"
So what if we thought about the Bible as a script to be lived? What if we imagined ourselves as characters in the Bible's unfolding drama? And what if, instead of trying to confirm all its facts and solve all its mysteries, we decided to live God's story, to put it into our hearts and hands and feet for a world that desperately needs us? That's the premise of the sermon series that I've been working through with you. And we come, if we are to do that, we come to certain acts that make up our Bible as we have it. So we've already learned about Act 1, and we looked at the creation accounts, and we marveled at our magnificent Maker who gifted us again and again with the gift of sun and night and the gift of rest and the gift of nature's beauty to be enjoyed as stewards of the earth. We talked about this beautiful text as actually reaching beyond science to point us to a God of love, a God who cares and compels us to love one another, to love creation, and to love God. Then we came to Act 2, and the story got a little bit messier. And we dealt with those little stories in the Bible, Adam and Eve, and Cain and Abel, the Tower of Babel. But we focused on the story of Cain and Abel, the story of two brothers. That's my brother John, and that's me with extremely long and curly hair. The curly hair is a gift from my mother, if you look back there. And I did not kill my brother. This is just the point of the story. It was two brothers. And we talked about that Cain and Abel story being a short story about the human dilemma. Simply put, is we don't often love our brothers and sisters. We have these little petty judgments and secret things we hide about others, and God invites us into a life that's so much more. A life where we can come to God, deal with this junk, and truly love one another. And then, a couple weeks ago, we came to Act 3. And we saw the movement of the story from Abraham, who God made this covenant that the whole world should be blessed through this family. And then we ended up somehow through life's challenges and conflicts in Egypt as slaves. And there's a moment of tragedy that this story, what began so good in God's creation, came to be as slaves, working for the Pharaoh to build those pyramids. And then God heard the groanings of the Hebrew people, of the Israelite people as slaves, and he sent them a leader, Moses, and Moses led them away from Pharaoh. And we talked about this, and we talked about that behind us at this pivotal moment in our faith journey was the Egyptian army. And in front of us was this enormous Red Sea, and we were caught in this climactic, dramatic tension. And we all complained against, what is God doing? What is Moses doing? How could we have gotten to this place? I mean, better to live for the Egyptians than to drown in the sea. And then Moses said these words, "Do not fear. Stand firm. Watch as God delivers you." And we put one foot in front of the other, and we walked through that Red Sea, and we made it. We made it, but of course, as all life goes, there's peaks and valleys, and as the Bible tells us, we were in the wilderness for over 40 years, but we kept on walking, and we eventually reached the land of Cana, the land that we now call Palestine, and we were separated into our various tribes, and we had to find a way of governing ourselves and making our way in this new land, so we came up with judges. So we appointed certain judges to rule over us and to help us in all our affairs, but pretty soon we realized that judges just didn't cut it, because in the ancient world, you had to have a king to be somebody. So we cried out to God and we asked for a king, and God gave us a king, and many of you know we were given King Saul, a tall and handsome military man. So King Saul led us for a little while, and before long it wasn't going to work out with Saul. He wasn't the type of leader to lead God's people. And now many of you know this story. We come to our story today, Act 4. And we come to Act 4 where we talk about King David. But more importantly, we talk about steadfast love. And so you all know the story. There's a giant of the Philistines, 6'9". I won't put it on because it looks tacky and goofy, and you won't take me seriously, if you did take me seriously before. But we have this giant, 6'9", the Bible tells us, a power forward or a center in the NBA. And this giant taunts the Israelites, and he says, "You guys are toast. Come over. Anyone can fight me, and let's settle this out." So the Israelites are being taunted by this giant, and no one steps up to the plate. Now remember, we had this king, King Saul. Now this should remind you, first of all, how wimpy Saul was. So a little boy comes from the shepherd field to give his brothers lunch, who are in the army, and the little brother can't stand it. He's just a little fiery, charismatic guy who says, "Why are we letting this giant taunt us like this?" So Saul, finding an opportunity to weasel his way out of facing this giant Goliath, says, "Oh, hey, how about I put on my armor on you?" And the kid says, "Great, because when I was fighting shepherds, I fought lions and bears away from the shepherds, so I could fight that Goliath, no problem." So, as the story goes, he's dressed up in armor, but David, the shepherd boy, he can't walk. So he takes off all the armor and he tells Saul, he's like, "I can do this without any armor on." And he gets 5 smooth stones. And so you all know this story. We've been told this story since we were kids. He takes the 5 smooth stones and he takes a slingshot and he slings it. Crack. He got the Goliath in the forehead. And this story foreshadows the rise of David to become the king of all Israel. This is the foundational story to this little boy is special, right? So as time goes on, we know this little boy is special. And then we come to the passage for today, 2 Samuel. Now David was a young boy in 1 Samuel. And in 2 Samuel, he made it to the top. He's the CEO, the military chieftain, the king of Israel. And at the height of his powers of kingdom, he says these words in 2 Samuel 9. He says, "Is there anyone left of the house of Saul that I can show kindness for the sake of Jonathan?" Now those words, again, just like the Bible does every now, should jar us, should shock us. Now, this is the king here. Kings don't talk like that. Kings say things like, "How can I expand my borders? How can I build a bigger palace?" And David does say that a couple chapters later, but anyway. And kings say things like that, but in this very interesting passage, "Who can I show the kindness for the sake of Jonathan?" Now, this kindness, this is one of those incredible Hebrew words called hesed. And we're going to talk about that, but I have to back up one step and tell you that why would he mention Jonathan here? He mentions Jonathan because after David beat Goliath, Jonathan and David create this friendship with one another, this pact, this bond. I don't know about you, but there's certain friendships that we have that we know are from God. Certain people God puts in our life that It's just, you know, there's something special about. That's what Jonathan and David had with one another, a covenant. And it's interesting because God uses relationships to show us steadfast love, to show us what God is about. So God used this relationship with David to show David and to show us what chesed is. It reminds me of this. This is one of my best friends, Nick Brockman. This is at my wedding. Now, Nick and I are as different as night and day. Like the time I decided to drive to Portland in my mom's Chevy Blazer, and he decided to come with me when we graduated from high school. And I said, I don't really have a plan. I just thought we'd drive up the coast and hang out at Portland for a few days, you know, and then drive back. And so Nick was crazy enough to come along with me. But when I picked Nick up, you know, I had the essentials, you know, cool sunglasses, an extra pair of Converse All-Stars, and, you know, enough drinks and Doritos to last for a couple weeks. And Nick said Nick had roadmaps, and he had sleeping bags, and he had ways that we could get into national parks and whatnot. So Nick is a good friend to have around. So, but I bring the heart to the relationship, and he brings the head. So you see a little bit the dynamic of our relationship, and I learned Nick is a good person to have around at all times. So, but as we grew together on this trip and as we grew together in life, you know, we lived near each other. We went to the same high school together. We started a little Christian group on campus. And, you know, we shared our dreams with one another. And I remember these conversations I'd have with them about, Nick, what if the church could be something different? What if the church could be a place that on Sunday morning you woke up and you were excited to go to? What if the church is a place where we stop worrying about what kind of clothes we wear and what type of words come out of our mouth, but we got real with each other and we were excited that we had this opportunity to encounter God through songs and through stories and through awesome music and through beautiful people? And Nick said, yeah, Dale, that's a good dream. Keep working on it. And and then, you know, so as this time period goes on, I'll share another short story about Nick. Is when Stacy and I had Trey, I was a poor seminary student working at Barnes & Noble, which if you know me very well, I don't make any money at Barnes & Noble because I spent money on the books. So I came home one day, and on the porch of our apartment was $100 worth of groceries. And my heart, it just kind of like bounced inside it, and I knew it was Nick. Because that's the type of thing that Nick did for me. That's the type of friend he is. And last year, I got a message from his wife, Corey, that Nick was in the hospital and had some stomach problems. And it was like everything in me just shut down. And my heart was just like, man, nothing could happen to Nick. I love this guy. This is my friend. I think that's chesed. That's steadfast love shown in relationships. That's what Jonathan and David have. And that's what many of us have experienced when we come to church with one another and outside in the world, these bonds, these friendships that move us forward in life. So back to chesed. Chesed is one of these theological words that like 10 words have to fit into it to make sense of it. So chesed, God's steadfast love, God's faithfulness, God's committed loyalty, God's kindness, God's loving kindness, or God's covenant fidelity. So God has this way of being with us that shows us how faithfully steadfast God can be. And he uses relationships, and he uses church, and he uses the beauty of nature. So then we have to move back now to why David would say this. Can I show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now, you need to understand, since the time of Goliath, David was a man of war. We have to get this clear in our heads. He was a warrior king. He had to defend the territory of Israel. And if you look on this map, it's not important that you can see everything, but Jerusalem is right here. And what happens with King David is that he is charged with defending Israel from all its neighbors and foes. And so he is a man of warfare. If you look at all the white places, you can actually see on the white, these are different battles he fought against foreign nations, defending the boundaries. So this boy who became a man, who became a king, who women and children in the streets sang this little song, Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. became the Savior, the King of all of Israel. And so in this dynamic that David didn't have a lot of rest. David was a warrior on the move. So then we come to chapter 9, right? And in chapter 9, it's so interesting because David seems to get this moment of respite, this break from battling the other armies. But David also has something on his conscience that I haven't brought up yet, that there was a civil war in the midst of all that external war. And the civil war took out all of Saul's family because, as all kingdoms work, you know how these civil wars work. They battled, and Saul's family and David's mighty men. Now, David didn't kill Saul and Jonathan, but the unfortunate consequences of the collateral damage killed the family of Saul. So David has a heavy heart externally, internally. There's a lot going on, and he says, is there anyone left of the house of Saul that I can show kindness, hased, God's steadfast love to? Then one of his servants gets Ziba, and Ziba comes forward and says, yeah, good news. There's one person actually left. Huh, great news. So the king's mighty men take their horses and they go to Lo Debar, an outside of Jerusalem town, a town associated with King Saul's land. So now the new king, all that land is his, but there's a young man living in Lo Debar, and his name is Mephibosheth. My favorite name to say in the Bible, Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth, what we don't know is that he actually has a child, and he has a wife. Now the king's mighty men on big horses come to get Mephibosheth. Now, you don't have to read very far. The Bible likes to skip into things, and we need to expand our imaginations and see what's going on. If all your family was slaughtered by the king and the king's mighty men, and the king's mighty men come to get you, Mephibosheth thinks this is the end. He's a vulnerable young man who's got a family to provide for, and he's also crippled in both his feet, probably why they didn't kill him in the first place. So the mighty men are there, and they say, you're coming with us. So you can imagine the type of anxiety and pain and curiosity of what is going to happen. They take him to the palace to see King David, and when King David sees him, he says, once again, he says, I want to show you the kindness, the hased. Well, hey, words are one thing, right? But actions are another, buddy. So Mephibosheth, flat out on his face, bows before him. We're not talking worship here. There's a lot of worship in the Bible. We're talking, I do not want to die. My family is in Lo Debar. Save me, king. Okay, so he prostrates himself before the king, and the king says, do not fear. Those same words that we heard earlier, right? And the same words that echo throughout the Bible. When you hear do not fear in the Bible, it means get ready. God is doing something epic. God is doing the salvation thing with somebody. He says, do not fear. I will show you kindness. There it is once again. Three times in this passage, hased, steadfast love, is brought up. And then David puts his money where his mouth is and he says, hey, you know all that land? I'm giving you all that land back of your grandfather Saul. And I imagine Mephibosheth taking a deep breath and saying, my family's going to be okay. But then David says this. David says, hey, guess what? That's not all you're going to get in this deal. You are going to sit at my table. Wow. There we have it again. God's banqueting table. This huge, enormous table where all are welcome to come in. Mephibosheth, the lame and crippled boy of his enemy, invited to the table. This is godly love at work. This is not the stuff of ordinary day politics, right? And so he gets this promise to sit at the table. And beyond our passage today, if you read the other verses, three more times David says, you will sit at my table. This is serious. Meals in the ancient world are where the magic is, where your reconciliation and your love of neighbor take place. At the table. Hased in action. So what we see is hased at work in David's life, who remembers God's steadfast love. And then we see hased at work as David shows love to this poor, crippled young man. Hased. God's steadfast love. And then we see another dynamic at work. in John chapter 13, towards the end of the gospel at chapter 13, Jesus, the narrator, says this: having loved his own who were in the world, he showed them the full extent of his love. Words again, love and love. The Hesed in the New Testament, making the connection, God's love from David to Mephibosheth to Jesus to every one of us here. And then Jesus pours a basin. And then Jesus takes off his outer robe and he ties it behind himself and he invites his disciples, every one of them, to come. And he washes their feet. And then he says this. He says this so we don't miss the point. It wasn't literally just about washing people's feet. He says, do as I have done to you. So I don't know where you're at today, what circumstances, where you find yourself in this awesome journey of human life. But God's steadfast love is there. It's there as a reminder. It's there for you to show with others. It's there to transform our community. It's amazing. It's like this. God's steadfast love, it comes and it comes and it comes. Like that beautiful waterfall down the road at Rifle Falls, it doesn't stop. And then it reminds me of the Foo Fighters and that song that they sing, Times Like These. And they sing very simple words. It's times like these we learn to live again. It's times like these we learn to give and give again. It's times like these we learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time again. God's steadfast love. You didn't know that the Foo Fighters understood the Hesed, did you? But they did. God's love for you, for our community, for the world. Amen.